Hello, and welcome back to the Fiction Author Business School podcast. I'm glad you guys are here. I have a little bit of a different episode for you today. I did a manuscript audit for author Gemma Clatworthy and her book, Eat, Pray, Dragons, and it's a really, really fun one. So I'm going to let you guys listen to that, and in it, we're going to talk about what she might be missing from her story, some elements that I thought were a little bit weak that she could improve upon, that sort of thing. And then at the end of the episode, if this is something that you would like me to do for your manuscript, I will give you the link so that you can sign up. Before we hop into the audit, though, if you have not given me a review on this podcast yet, could you maybe do me a solid and take just a couple of minutes to give me a review? It really helps me out. It helps Apple recommend this podcast to other authors who might also benefit from it. So if you could do that for me, I would be very, very appreciative. I love reading your guys' reviews.
Hi there, aspiring fiction author. Welcome to Fiction Author Business School. Do you want to write your stories with ease and confidence? Do you find yourself Googling how to write a fiction book or how to write a character arc? Do you want to create a fiction empire, but you can't even finish the story you're currently working on, and you find yourself doubting it will even be good enough? Hi, I'm Liesl. I too have been writing stories since I was just a kid. I wanted to do something about my fiction writing dreams, but got information overload every time I looked for writing help because there's just so much out there on the internet. I wanted confidence that I wouldn't disappoint my readers and a plan to publish regularly. I knew the foundation of any author career, including the marketing aspect, is a stellar and well-written story, but I didn't know how to be sure that my story was solid. I went on a journey to figure out what really makes readers tick and how to incorporate those addictive elements into my story. In this podcast, you'll find specific tactical fiction writing tips, solutions to writing more words more efficiently, and secrets to mastering your author mindset. So put on your fuzzy slippers, grab a notebook and pen and some chocolate, and let's write some fiction.
Great, great. All right, so let's get started on your manuscript audit. So I have some questions, and a lot of the things that I wrote down, it could be that they're missing from your manuscript, or they could just be missing from the description you gave me, you know, because obviously the 10 plot points don't cover everything. So it might be a matter of you have this in your manuscript, but you just didn't write it down in the 10 plot points, and that's totally fine. So I'm going to start by just basically asking you some questions. What is it that you're struggling with most in writing this manuscript?
So it is written. I think... What I was hoping to use this for was there anything that kind of jumped out to you from the brief summary that you have that you thought wasn't quite strong enough or didn't quite make sense with what I've said? And I think these questions will really help get to that, because as you've said, it's either that I haven't written it in the summary that I've given you or it's not in the manuscript, and that's something for me to think about when I go into the editing cave shortly.
Right Great. Okay, so is this book one or is this like a later book in the series?
So this is book seven, which I was never intending to write. So this is kind of a bonus book, if you like. It's uh-huh. After the main series arc, which is about a different character. So the main character in this book, Eat, Pray, Dragons, is the best friend of the main character in the kind of previous series arc. So this is a chance for her to get a bit of the limelight and for her to have a bit of a story.
So this is a spin-off then. How is that main book series doing? Do you see pretty good success with that?
It's not my most successful series, but it is complete, and my readers they like this main character, hence she's getting this side character, hence she's getting a spin-off. As another character they like as well for a spin-off. But at the moment, then my second series is set in the same world, and there's a couple of crossover characters as well. It's not my best-selling series by any means.
Okay. All right. So my first question then is, who exactly are you seeing as the villain of this story? You mentioned a social media follower who is up to some shenanigans. And then, of course, there's the dragon. But who are you seeing as the main villain in the story?
Yeah, so the villain is the social media follower kind of gets a bit stalkery of the main character. He's one of her followers. And then he is actually the one who manages to wake up the dragon because his motivation is that he wants a dragon Alora, who's the main character, her social media presence is all about dragons. She studies them. She loves them. This is an open magic world universe that she's in. And she actually can now communicate with a dragon that she met in the previous, like in the main series. So he's kind of jealous. He wants what she has. He finds this dragon, which happens to be in the place where she is by the end of the book, and he manages to wake it up.
Okay. So that's good. I kind of figured that it was probably him. So you said that he wants a dragon. That was one of my questions, is what is it he's trying to accomplish? And he wants what she has. Is there no, how does it connect to her though? I mean, you said he's kind of stalkerish, but is there no other way for him to get a dragon? Why is he specifically after her to get the dragon?
So because her following that she's built is all about dragons and how to communicate with them. So her PhD that she's studying is in the draconic language. So she's all about communicating with them. She loves dragons, isn't shy about that. So he thinks that she is the best way to help him get one. And he believes that she will be sympathetic because she has this kind of connection with dragons and now can even talk to one of them.
Okay. That makes sense. So when I'm looking at your 10 plot points, I mean, there were little things that struck me about each one that we could at least just strengthen them a little bit. So in the first, the world before, you say that she is already going to Italy to finish her doctorate thesis. And so she's just meeting with friends and family to say goodbye to them before she does this. But then in the intro, you say that she's running away because of this issue with her ex and that she feels rejected. So to me, that feels like things might be a little bit out of order there. If she's already planning to go to Italy at the beginning, then that probably wouldn't be the intro of conflict. The intro of conflict is usually something new that comes into her world. I also noticed that you don't really have any mention of the villain here. And it's not that she needs to come face to face with the villain this early, but very often we have some sort of foreshadow of the villain or some way that something he's doing is affecting her life. So I know your story's already written, but if it weren't written, if I were making suggestions, maybe part of the reason she's going to Italy is because she has a stalker. She kind of knows she has a stalker, but she doesn't know who it is. And she's also trying to get away from them. Or maybe she's planning to go to Italy anyway, you know, to finish her doctorate, but she's getting some cryptic messages about the stalker. Maybe I'll see you in Italy, or something that just kind of smacks of there's a little bit of contention here and it's a foreshadow of the villain. And I'm just not seeing that in your early plot points. Do you have anything like that already written into the story?
So there is a little bit that I could definitely make stronger. So she has some interactions with her social media followers, like through the book. And the guy who is the stalker, his handle, Big Dragon Energy, he kind of replies to some of her posts with some of what you're saying around see you there. And then when she is in Italy, he replies to one of the things saying, oh, I'm in Rome, maybe I'll see you around. So it's that kind of, I think it is in there, but I think it could probably be a bit stronger and maybe come out earlier. The conflict point you asked is really interesting because the way that I see it at the moment is that, so she probably makes the choice off manuscript before the manuscript even starts at the moment to go because of her ex. And so when we see her, she's saying goodbye to various friends that she has in the UK while she goes off, you know, for an extended period in Italy, but she's made that choice because of things like she doesn't want to be around. She feels rejected by her ex and she kind of just wants to run away from that. And the bit of backstory to that is in the rest of the series is she's just like perennially putting off completing her doctorate. Like she's been doing it forever. She doesn't finish it. So if this hadn't happened, this argument, whatever, with her ex, then she would probably never like have gone to Italy to, or even thought about going to do her doctorate. But she's like, no, I just need a fresh start. I need to get out of the country and have like this concentrated break to finish that. So I think it does all tie together, but you're making me think about whether that there needs
to be
something.
So what I would say is, I don't think that the way you have it is necessarily wrong. If you were doing it in a more linear fashion, the way that I would plan this out is maybe just have her at the beginning, not necessarily saying goodbye. She's just living her life. And then maybe show the argument with the ex, and that is what kicks her into leaving to go to Rome, because that's more of an inciting incident. It's more of an intro to conflict. Now, like I said, the way you have it isn't necessarily wrong. You can do a little bit of an inversion so that we're first seeing her say goodbye and don't understand why. And then maybe show her talk to her ex, and then you kind of bring out why and what happened and why, you know what I mean? I think you can do it that way. That's not wrong. Just make sure that all the elements are there. And I would put in a pretty strong foreshadowing of the conflict that she's going to be facing when she's in Rome, which is this social media follower. And make sure, if it were me, I would make sure to give it a little bit of a sinister feel in what he's saying to her, so that even if she's brushing it off and not thinking it's a big deal, the reader needs to be going, oh, yeah, something's going on there. That's not good, you know, so that we're kind of hooking them in, and they got to see what happens in Rome and who this strange person is who's commenting on her social media and that sort of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think I can definitely make them more sinister. And I will reread and see about whether it makes sense to show the argument with her ex on the page, because I think the main character, builds it up to be quite dramatic and this impetus, whereas, as you'll tell, like when we get to the end points, actually the ex has just said, I need some space to think. Like, she's an elf, so she's a very long-lived character. So like the idea of this feels like it's moving very fast to her ex, whereas actually, like in elf terms, like in human terms or gnome terms, it's like moving slow. So it's I don't know whether it would be that interesting to show on page, but let me have a think about
And one thing you could do, just as a suggestion, so you could think about, you could have, if you don't show the argument and it did come before, like you have it, you could always show her talking to somebody else about it, like talking to, I don't know who else is there, her best friend, her mom, whoever it is. And that way we can show that they did this, in her mind, they did this terrible thing, and it's very, very blown up. But then throughout the story, you can go back and show what was maybe actually said. And so we kind of get that she was hurt by it, but it wasn't quite the rejection she's making it out to be. So that would be another way that you could do it. So the early story escalation, you do say that she feels like someone's watching her. And do we get in the early story escalation, do we get any more of the social media stuff in that part of the story? Yeah.
So there's a bit of when she's in Rome, it kind of says, oh, you know, can we meet? Like, where are you going to be? That kind of stuff, which she will ignore. She's trying to be better about being on social media as well. That's like an area of growth for her. So, there's a bit of that. But I think, taking your previous comment about like making it just upping the sinister factor a little bit, I think that can definitely flow.
The other thought I had is, I would like to see something ideally that's a little bit more than the online interaction. So for the late story escalation, you mentioned her being chased by a black car. I would like to see more of an action like that in the early story escalation, even if we never see who's in the car, if we don't know what it is, if it's not a big deal. A lot of times some sort of action kind of needs to be there. So if it was chasing her, but then somehow she gets away from it, or it turns down a side street and she kind of thinks she was maybe imagining that, or, you know what I mean? Just a little bit more of an action to go along with this early story escalation, I think would really help to up the tension in the story.
Yeah. And there is a little bit of that scene. This is where it's great to talk you through it, because when you're writing a summary, it doesn't help.
So
she does feel like there's someone kind of in Rome and in a crowd. She just gets that, like, you know, where the hairs stand up down your spine, where you feel like you're being watched. And she's, she does actually see him, but she doesn't realize it's him. And then she ends up kind of running away to a library and hiding in there for a bit. But I'll reread that scene and kind of make sure it's got enough tension in it to meet the action you're asking for.
Good, good. All right. So then we're going to move on to the turning point. So my question is, in the story, why does she specifically go to the nunnery to write her thesis? Why does she need to go there?
Oh, they have some rare manuscripts that can only be found, and they won't lend them out of the nunnery. Okay. So she arranged pre-going that she will spend some time with a friend that she knows in Rome, which is the eat part of the story, and then she will go to this religious enclosure, which is the pray part, but she's not there to pray, she's there to study. So yeah, that's why she's going to the nunnery.
Okay. So how does, my question is though, what does it have to do specifically with the villain, and how is she shifting from reaction to action? So usually with the turning point, we have her during the first point, she's just reacting to what's happening. So she sees this guy commenting online, she's ignoring it. She maybe sees him in a crowd or feels like she's being watched, but she's either running away or ignoring it or something like that. But we need to see her being more proactive, specifically toward what's happening with the villain at the turning point. So this is where they usually like hatch some sort of plan for what's going to happen moving forward. And I don't know, I guess you could say that she's being proactive in terms of her doctorate and her manuscript, but I don't see how that's necessarily connecting to the villain. But when I was reading it, my biggest thought is that I don't feel like the villain has enough of a presence in the story. We don't know what they're up to. We don't know how they are affecting her on a very physical level. I mean, of course, an emotional level too, but how it just feels like she kind of goes to Rome and wanders around a little bit, and then we have the climactic moment. And I think we need a little bit of a heavier presence for the villain, especially there should be something that she at the turning point is being proactive about when it comes to the villain. So even if it were something like her deciding to actively block him on social media because he's become so angry or vitriolic, or he's threatening her on social media, or, you know, maybe she was keeping up with her social media up to this point and she decides she's going to take a 100% break because she needs to focus on her man. You know what I mean? Just something so that she's being a little bit proactive toward what's happening with the antagonist in the story.
Yeah, that makes total sense. I'm scribbling notes here.
Yeah, you're good.
Because then if she did do that, block him or totally block social media, she could turn it on later and see a load of messages from him that escalate and kind of, it could like click who he is at that point.
And even though this is happening kind of off page, I mean, in terms of his psychology, maybe that is what spurs him toward what happens in the climactic moment, because he doesn't have that outlet or that pathway of messaging to her anymore because she's blocked him, you know. So that could also make sense as to what his motivations are to get going. So I kind of said similar things with the climactic point. I wasn't sure I was completely understanding why, and it's making a little more sense now with what you've told me. So I'm assuming they'll have some sort of interaction. What is it that he says to her? What is it how do they interact that causes him to decide to wake up the dragon?
Yeah, so I think trying to like remember without having the manuscript in front of me. Sure. I don't know if you're like me, but I put it aside for a little bit before I start editing. So
totally.
It's not fresh in my mind. But there's definitely something about he finds the dragon because of her. So that is kind of how they link there. So there's definitely that relationship. And then I think he kidnaps one of the nuns to blackmail her to I think that's so ridiculous. I wrote it to get the main character to kind of speak to the dragon on her behalf because she has studied this ancient language that they have.
Okay. So that was the other question I had in terms of world building. Is she the only one who can wake it up, or the only way to wake it up is to speak the draconian language? Is that the case?
I think that's part of it. I think he has some sort of artifact that gives him some magic that can wake it up, because she doesn't have magic and it is spelled to be asleep. But the part of the like spell is like an incantation, which is in this language, which she speaks.
Okay. So this is really good. This is coming together a little bit better for me now. And I think that if you just put some of the hints in earlier, it's going to make it really, really cohesive. So what I would say then is maybe the reason he's, because you already said that he wants the dragon. So the reason he's following her on social media is specifically because he has done the work and found this artifact, like you said, but he needs someone to speak the incantation, so he can't do it himself. That's why he's after her. That would make perfect sense. And you could even drop in some hints, maybe not him saying he has the artifact, but maybe asking her, hey, if somebody did find the artifact, could you theoretically do the, you know what I mean? So that we kind of get some hints of maybe what he's after, even if it's not making total sense at the beginning. Then when he comes to the nunnery, maybe it's because she, like we said, she blocked him or he wasn't able to speak with her online. And so then it would make sense that he has the artifact. He wants her to do this. And he's going to, like you said, kidnap the nun, try to blackmail her. Like that all makes sense. We just need to work out his motivations and make sure that they are making sense by the time we figure them all out at the end of the story. So I was also wondering, I would almost say instead of making her go to the nunnery in the middle of the story, I would just have her go there from the very beginning. Maybe her doctorate is on the draconian manuscripts that they have. So that's always the intent, is for her to go to the nunnery. And like I said, the turning point would be more something she does that has to do with him and the pressure he's putting on her and the way he's being villainous toward her. Just because I think it would make the story a little more cohesive if she's always planning to go there. And if maybe she even, you know, puts it on social media that she's going there to study because she doesn't see why it would be a problem, then of course that's how he figures it out and knows when she's going to be there and all of that. So the other thing is that you do say that her ex shows up with her dragon. Why, mostly just curiosity, why does she leave her dragon behind when she goes on this trip?
So it's not like... he's not a familiar. He's just a dragon.
Okay.
So although she could communicate with him, it's not like he's not her pet or anything. And he's like living his dragon life in a special reserve.
Living his best life at home.
Yeah. Now he's like been awakened and freed from an evil tyrant in the previous part of the series. But she also just like totally wants a break. So where he lives is in or near to an elven city, which is where her ex lives. So she's just like, anything to do with that. So that's like part of her running away. So yeah, he's on his own, but it's kind of that connection. And so the spark with her ex, so there's like three people in this story because of the romance thread as well. Her ex kind of figures out, no, actually I do really care about her. I'm worried. They get a sense that she's in danger from some of the social media stuff. So maybe they can see some of these escalating messages if she's taking a break from social media, and they kind of can get worried that way. And then, so there's like some action from them to come and help. But yeah, obviously at the end, it will be the main character who kind of, I don't know, I can't remember exactly what she does, but she does some crucial thing. Maybe it's like, I think she goes back and finds a spell that will put the new dragon back to sleep again or something. It's something like that. So she kind of has the final thing, but her friend dragon and her ex are definitely a big part of like helping her, because she doesn't fight or anything. She does a little bit, but she's basically a scholar.
Okay. Yeah, no, that really helps, because one of the things I was saying is I wasn't sure why the ex showed up, so that makes sense. In terms of, I had one suggestion, and that was just that you specifically said that she had this realization, so this is the internal change in her, that she needs to stop running and accept help. So I was even thinking maybe she could call or contact her ex and ask for help, and that would be her changing a little bit. But if you want to do it the way you said too, where they're seeing the text message, so are you planning to show them seeing the social media messages in real time, or is that something they tell her after they arrive?
I think tell her after they arrive. So it's all done in kind of single point of view.
Her point of view. Okay. Yeah. Well, that works. But maybe even, I don't know, I would like to see her somehow demonstrate to her ex that she has changed and okay asking for help. Maybe she needs her ex's help to get this artifact or the spell she needs or something to put the dragon back to sleep, you know, just in some way so that we can see that she's changed and has kind of humbled herself a little bit. And then she can have this realization that maybe all along her ex wasn't rejecting her so much as needing a little bit of space, you know, that sort of thing. So if we could find some way to demonstrate that in the final act, that would be really, really powerful too.
Yeah, that's really
cool. Let's see, what other questions did I have? So how much time passes, and I guess this is just a logistical thing, in the climactic sequence from when the social media follower awakens the dragon to when her ex arrives? Or, I mean, I guess if they were on their way anyway because of the messages, maybe that doesn't matter so much. But when I was reading it, I was just wondering how much time passed there.
Yeah, it's not much time. So it's, I think it all resolves, I don't know, over the course of a night maximum. So it's, it's not a long period of time that the showdown happens in. It's quite a dramatic, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes several chapters, but it all happens in quite a
time. I kind of think the climax should take several chapters. So what happens then to the villain after he awakens the dragon? What happens to him in the story? Does he run away? Does he get killed? Does she see him again?
She doesn't see him again. He's not killed. I think he is arrested by some international magic police force, like Interpol, but...
Yeah.
Magic. He gets kind of his comeuppance that way.
Okay. Good. Yeah. I was just wondering what happened to him because you didn't list it here. And then my last question is, why does her ex now propose to her as opposed to before when they were wanting space? Like, do you have an explanation for kind of the change they went through to make that decision?
I think it's the almost losing... the main character has kind of sparked this, even though the ex is an elf and has a really long life. Actually, she doesn't want to spend any more of it away from the love of her life. So it's that kind of spark of almost losing her.
Okay. So, yeah, as long as you bring that out, I think that that's great. And that, you know, would make a lot of sense. So I didn't have really any problems with the resolution as long as we just bring that out enough in the story. I think that was most of my notes. It was mostly just making sure that the villain is very, very present. And we kind of need to make sure that the reader, it's a little bit hard to explain it this way, almost like the reader knows what their motivations are, or at least what they're doing in the story to complicate it for the main character. So we just need to make sure and give them a heavy enough presence to be really sinister. But yeah, beyond that, it seems like you've got a pretty well thought out story here.
Thank you. And can I ask can I go back to the internal realization part of the plot points around asking for help, which was your suggestion, which I really like. Mm-hmm. In your view, would it be powerful enough if she tried to ask for help but couldn't get through because they are already en route to her, so she has to leave a message, but so she is still asking for help, the internal kind of change has happened, mm-hmm. and but there's almost like a not quite a dark night of the soul, but like, you know, she's feeling like she's alone, she's not getting that because they are not answering, even though they are then on their way.
Yeah, no, I actually think that it is. I always call it uber despair, but it's pretty much the same thing as Dark Night of the Soul. So I always talk about from the internal, there will be a moment where, and it doesn't have to be a long moment or anything you draw out a lot on the page, but where she kind of looks back over what has happened. And then that's when her transformation happens. So she, you know, maybe realizes for whatever reason she needs help, and maybe she was stupid not to ask for help. You know, you could even, now that I'm thinking about it, you could throw in an element where maybe her ex is trying to get a hold of her while she's there, and she's specifically ignoring the calls because, again, for the same reason, she's feeling rejected. She's trying to make her ex suffer a little bit, and this is what it feels like to be rejected by the love of your life, that sort of thing. Anyway, and then when she's looking back over it, she's thinking, okay, that was idiotic of me. I was being childish, and now I genuinely need help. And then when she goes to call her, that really would be the uber despair, because if she needs help and it's not there, she's not getting it. And so she's thinking, okay, well, I'm toast, you know, I'm not going to get help. I don't, there's nothing I can do about this. But then the aha moment comes because they show up. And you, the only thing you have to be careful with that is that it's not deus ex machina. It's not just them showing up out of the blue to save the day. But because you have the social media messages and that they saw them and knew she was in trouble, that's not deus ex machina. It's, you know, you've set it up in the story in a way that is logical and makes sense. So yeah, absolutely. If they don't answer and she doesn't get it, then that actually kind of contributes to the despair of the climactic moment. So I think that would be really good to pull that out and emphasize a little bit more.
Thank you. I'm taking a lot of notes here.
Yeah, you're fine. And I will send you this afterward too, so you can rewatch it if you want to as well.
Thank you. Cool. Well, thank you so much.
Any questions for me or anything else you want to go over? We've got just a few more minutes here.
Yeah, the only thing that's not resonating with me with what we've gone through is the part about always going to the nunnery and not being in Rome. Okay. And part of that is to do with the title, which I'm sure you're aware is very close to another famous book. The title is Eat, Pray, Dragon. Right. So I do kind of want to give her the time to do like the enjoyment, like nourishing her soul, but also like feasting and the sensory delight part of being in, you know, Italy before she does the studying serious part, which is equivalent of pray.
And I mean, that's totally fine. If that's the way you've structured it, then definitely stick with that. Like I said, the turning point is just less about what she's planning to do in Rome and more about her interaction or her reaction or action to the antagonist. So, you know, that's fine. If that's the way that you've planned it and that's the way that you want it, then absolutely do that. And especially if you're following that, you know, what do you call that? That eat, pray, love template. I think that's super cool. And it's super fun to do with the dragon story. So yeah, I mean, whatever resonates most for you, this is your story and you're the only one who knows how it needs to be. So do whatever resonates with you and just make sure that you put in something for the turning point that has to do with the villain. And that's fine. As long as you're meeting that criteria and we see the change in how she's reacting to the villain, that's more than enough. And what's going on in the background of the story doesn't have to change necessarily. So,
yeah, no, I really like your thoughts about being more like making more of the villain, even if, as you say, she doesn't necessarily realize, but like those points, I think that, yeah, making those more sinister and getting him to maybe ask some questions out like dative tenses or something in Draconic, as he's trying to work something out, could be a really fun bit of foreshadowing too. Yeah. So yeah, thank you so much. This has been really helpful to go through. And yeah, I've taken loads of notes with some ideas for tightening things up. So thank you so much.
Of course. I'm glad to help. Well, thank you for letting me help. I think you've got a delightful story and it'll be super fun. So good luck with it and with everything you do. And just let me know if you need anything else. Okay.
Yeah, of course. And if you want to let me know like when this is going out on your YouTube or on your podcast or wherever you put it, let me know and I'll share it and everything. So thank you so much.
Great. Yeah.
All right. I hope you guys enjoyed listening to that audit today. I had a lot of fun doing it. And if this is something that you would like me to do for you, you can sign up for one at bit.ly/manuscript audit. And I will link that up in the show notes. All right. Everyone have a wonderful week of writing and I will see you next week. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening today. Before you go, would you be willing to do me a solid? If you found any value at all in this episode today, would you be willing to share it with other authors just like you in the hopes that they might find some value in it as well? Happy story crafting this week. Remember, only you can bring the world the unique story that you are trying to tell. Only you can succeed in your own unique way in getting it out of your mind and your heart and into a medium where it can reach thousands, if not millions, of salivating readers. You don't have to worry about failure because there is always a market for awesome.